This episode of Before the Train Wreck podcast is brought to you by the Grondike Soap Company. Guys, I use Tactical Soap and God of War beard oil every single day. Tactical Soap is a handmade natural product made in the United States of America from ingredients you can actually pronounce, not endocrine disrupting chemicals that are going to lower your testosterone. Both the soap and beard oil is infused with bioidentical pheromones that are designed by a clinical psychologist and pheromone expert to maximize attractiveness to the opposite sex. Go visit coopersoap.com and that will automatically apply 10% off your order. Consider grabbing one of the trifecta packs to save even more. If you are a bearded man and want a majestic beard like yours truly, the God of War Beard Oil is hands down the best beard oil product I've ever used. Gentlemen, this is the most manly handmade soap that we know of. Other soaps are going to get you clean. This one will get you dirty. Again, you're going to want to visit coopersoap.com now and place your order. That's Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, soap.com now. Hey guys, welcome. This is episode number 40, Before the Train Wreck, rejoined again by Dr. Sean T. Smith. Welcome, Sean. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Yeah, good. I'm going to dig up that email link that you sent me in the chat right now. If you guys are watching on the various platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, all that good stuff, consider joining us on YouTube. It's easier for me to track comments in that area. And if you have a question, you can click that link. You're going to go to my call screener, Josh, who will make sure your audio and your video and everything's working good before he puts you in. Make sure you have a good question tied around tonight's topic or an experience if you'd like to share something, which would be cool too. We're going to aim to wrap on this one for about like 30 to 45 minutes or so. Sean, you good with that?
Yeah.
So you sent me a link here. You want to open with this? Yeah, go ahead. Psychology tells us why older people don't enjoy new music. Let me put that up on the screen.
This is just fluff. I know we got more important things to talk about here tonight, but this is a psychologist at a Knox University. He didn't do a study or anything. It's just a little editorial piece that he put together where he is talking about the mirror exposure effect, which says that the more you're exposed to something, the more likely you are to like it, which is why politicians like to be in our face all the time. It's why credit cards market to us repeatedly and through different channels so that they can get in front of our face a lot. And so he's talking about the fact that old guys like us don't like new music, which tends to be the case. And his thought is that because you listen to more music when you're young and you sort of slow down on taking on music when you hit your 30s, that you've been exposed to a certain kind of music because that's what was around when you were listening. And then you sort of get crystallized there and you don't mature beyond that just because you're not being exposed. So I wanted to check in with you, not to say that you're an old guy, but just wanted to see what are your thoughts on this? Do you like new music?
I like, actually, maybe this is going to date me, but I'm starting to prefer older music now.
What era?
You know what? I watched that documentary on Woodstock the other day on Netflix, and like there was an era where people actually played instruments and, you know, strum strings and hit drums and pulled and pluck strings and bass guitars. And they did all kinds of stuff. Like they'd even put on elevator boots and makeup and tassels, and you know, there's an entertainment level to it that today, I don't know, dude, it's like you watch stuff that's made on a keyboard and a computer. It doesn't have the same soul as the older music. Like bands like Led Zeppelin, Boston, 80s stuff like The Cult, Metallica, AC/DC, you know, and then bands kind of just started to disappear, you know. I suppose it doesn't really tie into today's topic of settling, but I guess we could put it to the point of they found a way to settle to make music easier and simpler and more industrialized, right?
Yeah, and there have been people who've broken down new music, and not all of it, obviously. There's some good groups out there. Like I like some new stuff. Like there's a group called Gorillaz out there, and I like them because they do interesting things. I've always liked interesting music, but people have looked at the fact that the dynamic range in music has swung or it has shrunk quite a bit. So it used to have really deep bass and really high highs you have this much narrower range of sound now. And in fact, you remember that song, Africa by Toto?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone redid it. I think it was, I'm not going to remember who did it, Weezer maybe, but somebody redid it. And you can hear the difference in these two songs. They're almost identical, except the fact that they took out everything that was interesting when they remade the song. So they took out the interesting instruments. They took out the really deep bass. They took out the high parts. And so now you have this very narrow range of sound, and it's just boring.
Yeah, I agree. I was just digging up the name of the video that I was going to reference, because it kind of ties in to my estimation of like the last of exciting instrumental type of music. And to me, like, if you watch the document, it's not really a documentary, it's kind of like a fictional documentary, but it's called The Dirt by and it's on Netflix. It's about Motley Crue. Did you ever see it?
Yeah. It's like, great. Yeah, it's great.
Right? You know what I'm talking about? Like, there's a story behind the band, right? Like, there's never going to be another Kickstart My Heart, right? Ever. And like, I got to go to Bruntingthorpe Airstrip in the UK and England, and I drove a LaFerrari 203 miles an hour down an airstrip, wide open, listening to Motley Crue's Kickstart My Heart, right? I would have never picked any other song to do that. Like, it wouldn't have been Justin Bieber or some other ridiculous nonsense today that they put out.
Justin Bieber.
Drivel.
Justin Bieber in a LaFerrari doing 200 miles an hour. Yeah.
Forget it, man.
But the music that you, okay, you're talking about going back and listening to stuff from the 60s and so forth, that wasn't your era. So in a sense, that's new music for you, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's newer than Elvis. Like, my dad would say that Elvis is still the king, right? But I know Guns N' Roses was a better band than whatever Elvis put out.
Okay. There's this litmus test. They say that you can divide the world into one of two groups, Elvis or Beatles. So are you Elvis or Beatles?
Well, I think broadly speaking, the British were more into Elvis than the Beatles, but North Americans were more into the Beatles and Elvis. American, he was popular in Europe, and the Beatles were, you know, from Liverpool, and they were real popular in North America.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, either one of their music is basic, but to me, it laid the foundation of what we get today and the rise up through the 70s and 80s. I think 70s and 80s were like the golden era of like the best music.
So here's another litmus test. Ginger or Marianne?
Oh, depends. Are we talking about The Weeknd, or are we talking about living with her for a long time? Because Marianne makes some good pie, but Ginger looks hot and sexy as hell, right?
Yeah.
So
is so
it a
which
weekend
is it?
Or is it, well, it depends. Is it a weekend, or are we talking long term here?
Well, you might have to live with her. I don't know.
You know, women get their alpha seed, beta need. Why can't we, you know, have our weekend and long-term? I don't know. Why not?
There you go. Yeah. I wonder how many, we have younger listeners. I wonder how many of these younger guys will even know what I'm talking about.
I know. I'm trying to keep it like more PG-13, because every time I hit publish on these videos at the end, they're always demonetized or they get limited ads by YouTube. They don't seem to like us. So, hey guys, if you love us, thanks for watching. Okay. So tonight's topic, we were going to do this one kicking off on settling, and I could start anywhere with this, right? And I know that I gave you a couple of days notice and you wanted to kind of mill on it a little bit, but I could start anywhere with this. I could share my own stories. I've done hundreds of calls with guys. You know what the most recent ones is? Why don't we start with this? The one that I get a lot of coaching calls with guys is, I'm 38. I've been dating this girl for a year. She lives in another country, but we met at a conference here and we see each other once a month, and she's 40. She's got her shit together, no kids, never been married. She wants to have kids. Should I go put a baby in her? Should I go settle and just do this because of the fear of missing out? And it always seems to stem from, you know, I see all my friends and they're on social media and, you know, I see the pictures of their kids and they seem to be happy and everything's great and all that sort of stuff. And they get that FOMO, right? You know, the fear of missing out. And they just kind of figure, all right, well, things haven't gone so well. Maybe I'll take a stab at this and just go all in. And they just settle. And I can't see that sort of being a brilliant idea. Like, he doesn't know this woman that well, didn't spend a whole lot of time with her except for, you know, the odd week here and there for the last 12 months, but wants to wife her up and put a baby in the oven. To me, that's settling, no?
Yeah, that's settling. That's bad decision making. I guess it sounds like what you're describing is almost panic. I was thinking of different scenarios as
panic.
I was thinking about this, but okay. Panic's too strong a word. But you said fear of missing out, so that anxiety that life is passing you by, and so you better latch on to something. Yeah, I guess that's a form of settling. I was contemplating guys I've known that settled when they were younger, and it was sort of this. It was the same fear of missing out, where I've met so many guys who said, well, I've said, why did you marry her? Because I'm, you know, ask pointed questions like that. Why did you marry her? And so many guys have said to me, well, I was young and I thought I was supposed to get married and there she was. And I figured she was the best I was ever going to do. And you're making that decision when you're in your early 20s, when you don't know what your potential looks like when you're in your 30s and your 40s, when your market value is as high as it's going to be. You know, guys are making these decisions when their value is as low as it's going to be.
True.
And then you're talking about guys that ride through their 30s and 40s or around 40, right? And then they're driven to settle for something.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I had another one the other night. So this other guy was dating this foreign woman. She was a foreigner, but she was living in the States for the last 4 years. Not a citizen. She's pushing to move in together. She's from Asia. He's North American. She's pushing to move in together, and she wants to have a kid. Okay. And she's late 20s, like 28, 29 or something like that.
How old is he?
He's 38, you know, okay. Similar sort of age again. And he's like, you know, do I settle? And, you know, first question I asked him was, well, do you want to have kids right now? He's like, that's not really on the radar. I just got a promotion. I'm really working on that sort of stuff. And I think that's what I should be focusing on. All right. So is it a open question for you in the future, right? Is this something you want to do maybe 3 years? You know, would you consider it again in 3 to 5 years, for example? Yeah, I might be open to it then. All right. So what's the rush? Like, why do you need to settle for this girl? I mean, you know, you've been dating her for like a year. She wants to move in together. She doesn't have a green card. Oh, and the best part of the story was she's telling him that she wants to get the green card through her company, which she thinks that she would get, or she would lead him to believe. It's like, dude, the ultimate is getting wifed up and, you know, you putting a baby in her, right? Like, she's pretty much mm-hmm. guaranteed to stay after that point. So I don't know. It's just like... And it's good that they ask questions, but I don't think a lot of guys have the opportunity to pose a question like that to many people. I mean, maybe they try, but at the same time, I'm not sure that they get the greatest advice, or maybe they feel like they're not getting the greatest advice. I mean, is this something that you talk to people a lot about?
Yeah. I had that speech a year ago this month where I was talking specifically about this kind of scenario where guys get into it sounds like the kind of guy that you're talking about, that he's successful and he's motivated and things are going his way. And then he gets into his 30s and thinks, oh, wait a minute, I forgot to get married. Maybe I better attend to this part of my life. And because they haven't been attending to that part of their life and really focusing on it, they are prone to making some pretty sloppy decisions.
Yeah, I think we've said this before in another broadcast, but it feels like guys spend way more time vetting their next vehicle, like, you know, what the next car is going to be. How much can it tow? How much power does it have? How many seatbelts does it have? How many airbags does it have? Does it have a 5-star crash rating, safety rating? You know, can I tow my boat with it or just my sled? Right. What kind of gas mileage does it have? Can we get in a gasoline motor or diesel? What about a hybrid option? Right. And they'll spend way more time vetting their next car than what they do their next relationship or perhaps even a wife. And they just kind of settle because it's like, it shows up. It's, you know, it's almost like, oh, somebody just kind of like, would you buy the first car? I know that you just bought a vehicle, so why don't we use that as an example? Would you buy the first truck that somebody just kind of like pulled up to your house and said, hey, Sean, brought you a new vehicle. I'd like you to have a look at it and see if you want to buy it.
Sort of thing. I agonized. Well, I didn't agonize over this decision. I enjoyed this decision. I was researching trucks and engines and suspensions and so forth. Man, I knew this truck inside out by the time I decided to buy it.
Right. So, I mean, you spend a lot of time on that, but there's guys that don't spend a lot of time on an idea like maybe putting a baby in a woman. Yeah. Right.
Dudes, well, I think, go ahead.
Hey, math, right? But 1 week a month for 12 months, right? How many weeks does that put us at? 12 weeks. How much can you possibly know about somebody? Like, would you ever get married to a 40-year-old woman at 38 and put a baby in her because her biological clock is ticking or it's pretty much expired?
No, that's going to sound harsh, but that's a her problem. You know, she's had 22 years to sort that out. And then I come along and I'm supposed to solve that problem for her. No, but a lot of guys get sucked into that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And they start to feel guilty like, you know, if I keep dating her, then I'm just burning through more of her time and she's 40. And what if I let her go and she can get somebody? It's like, don't make your problems my problems. Yeah. Right. You know, it's kind of like you said, it's like a her problem.
Yeah. That's a fair question. If you're worried about burning her more of her time, good. Yeah, you should. Says you have a conscience, so let her go and pursue what it is that she needs to pursue.
Do you guys settle in other areas of their life that cause train wrecks for them? What have you seen?
I certainly see a lot of guys settling in their jobs, don't you?
I do, yeah. You know, they get up in the morning to do a job they hate, to buy shit they don't really need, pay interest on a loan they can't really afford. You know, you can go right down the list and all those things. But yeah, I totally agree. I think the vast majority of guys out there settle for a job that because it's just a job and they think it's the best they can get, or they can't do any better, or maybe they feel like they're not worth more. I think it's like a, you know, like, what's your worth? You know, the question really boils down to, like, what do you feel like you're worth? And if you have a, I mean, you can have a high opinion of yourself, but it's not met in the physical world. Or you can have a high opinion of yourself and you've got everything to back it up, right? Like, mm-hmm. you've got the success, you got the money, you have all those sort of things. So, you know, I mean, like, you can fake it till you make it, you know, act as if. What was that famous line from Boiler Room? Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Boiler Room. You haven't seen Boiler Room? That's such a great film. Yeah, you should check it out. Definitely add that to your list. You're going to thank me after you watch that one. It's got a lot of great actors in it too, but there's a scene, it's basically like a sweat house call center. And there's a scene where, you know, he says some, you know, just act as if sort of thing. Like, you know, you can be whoever you want on the phone. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, you can be whatever, you know, to push these sales. But it's like, you can act like you're worth more and you'll get better results. I mean, you know, you can start with that at least. But I think you're right. I think a lot of guys do settle for jobs that they don't really dig, or that they just do because they feel it's all they're worth. I mean, why would you wash dishes? I get it if you're 16, right?
Yeah.
But if you're 30 years old and you're washing dishes, I'd be asking questions about, you know, do you really think that that's being the best version of yourself? Like, you, like, are you playing to win there, or are you playing not to lose, right? Because that's really what settling boils down to. Sorry, I was doing choke holds at the dojo today.
Okay.
I hurt my throat a little bit. I'll get better. Don't worry. Yeah, but there's guys that settle there too, right?
Yeah. So what were you like when you were in your 20s and you had the crap jobs?
I did them because it's all I could get, or it's all I thought I could get. I mean, I did everything from, I worked for the Ministry of Natural Resources and I cleared out portage trails, weevils out of trees. We planted trees. We did all kinds of shit for like 6 weeks up in Northern Ontario. For like $3 an hour. Like, it was even below minimum wage because they would subtract your room and board from it. And the room was a trailer. It was just a trailer, and they had like various rooms kind of built in. It was like remote location sort of stuff. And the board was a local native lady that would come around and deep fry some crap for us and slop it on a plate. But yeah, man, I've done some crap jobs, you know. I've done a lot of heavy lifting. I've done a lot of physical labor. I've gotten up at 4 o'clock in the morning to trim Christmas trees in the summertime in July, because that's when they have to do it apparently before the sun comes up. You know, at 17 years old, I've done a lot of stupid things.
You got to sneak up on them, I guess, in the dark.
No, apparently when it gets too hot during the day, it browns the edge of the, pines and the, you know, the branches of the, what do you call them? You know, the evergreen trees.
Right.
It like browns them, right? If the sun comes up too hot. So that's why we had to get up at 4 a.m. to do it.
All right. So if I was your supervisor when you were 22-year-old Rich Cooper, what would I have said about you?
Oh, you would have hated me. I got fired from IGA. I got fired from the Christmas tree pruning job. I think I got fired from about two or three different jobs.
Why'd you get fired from IGA?
Because a girl I liked at school drew an anarchy sign on my Converse, you know, the white section on the Converse, the Chucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she drew an anarchy sign on the front of it, and the supervisor got pissed off and he sent me home and he goes, "You're on suspension for a week. You're gonna have to think about your shoe situation." I just never went back. I was like, fuck those guys.
Okay. Yeah. How's your shoe situation now?
Well, nobody's writing anything on it, and I don't really care what anybody thinks because I can't be fired. So,
all right. And then where else did you get fired from?
I got a package. Okay. So I learned when I was about my early 30s, I think I was 30, 31 or so, but I learned at that time that you get hired for your resume and you get fired for fit. And I was working at a collection agency, and this is what pivoted me into my debt business sort of thing. But I got in a fight with the vice president. He was this asshole French Canadian guy that always just, you know, poked at me all the time. And, you know, if you poke a bear enough times, it's going to snap, right?
Yeah.
So I let him have it one day. I mean, I didn't hit him or anything, but I just yelled back at him. When they were giving out packages towards the end of the year, I got it and I went home. And that's what kind of, you know, shifted me into just doing my own thing. Cause I got tired of settling. Like, I knew that I was worth more at that point. I wasn't getting paid more. I wasn't making more. I wasn't doing any more work, but I knew that, like, look, I've done all of these jobs up to the age of 30. everything's just kind of like let me down, or it's like the juice was not worth the squeeze. Like you'd be better off dating a feminist than doing some of the dumb shit that I got paid nothing for when I was a lot younger. The ROI would actually be a little bit higher. But that being said, learned a few things, and I thought, all right, let's take a stab at doing this myself, and I did it. All right, I mean, you must have done the same thing. Like, why didn't you settle for running your dad's bar? Right, like, why did you decide to go to school and become a clinical psychologist?
Because I was cocky. I think you and I were of a similar stripe when we were younger. I overestimated my value, and it sounds like you overestimated your value a little bit, and we grew into our value, I think. Maybe I got it wrong. Do you think you overestimated your value?
It took me a while, I'll be honest, because, you know, I grew up with scars all over my, you know, my arms and my neck and my chest and stuff. And, you know, I had braces growing up because I had buck teeth and sort of thing. So it took me a while to like, and I had a stutter too. I had a very bad stutter actually until I was about 15 or so. But it took me a while to kind of like grow through all those things and start to realize that I was worth more than what I was settling for, right? There's been a lot of times where I've skipped out on opportunities where people saw the value in me, but I didn't think high enough of myself that I settled for less, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. And I was this weird mixture of really high esteem and low self-esteem when I was younger. On the personal front, I didn't have any self-esteem, but I had been working for so long that I knew how to work, and I knew I was very good at working, and I was ambitious and I wanted to achieve something. So in that one little realm, I completely overestimated my worth. And I remember going in to a supervisor one day and saying, I want a job, or I mean, I want a raise. And he was like, well, why? I was kind of speechless because my answer was, well, because I work my ass off. And he said, well, that's not an answer. You need to be working your ass off. And so that was my first real thought that, okay, maybe I'm overestimating myself a little bit here. But getting back to the topic, I think there are guys who overestimate themselves in this area, whether the area of work or the area of women. And that's actually different because there's some interesting research on overestimating yourself in regards to women. But they're the guys who underestimate in one of those. So
let's hit on the overestimation and what train wrecks might potentially come out of that. I want to hit the super chat in a minute. Okay. Real quick. Here's the join link. If you want to ask us a question live tonight, we're going to take call-ins, maybe in about 15 or 20 minutes or so. Josh is screening, so make sure you have good audio and camera works. Everything's clean. You've got a straight up question. Or if you have an experience to share about a time where, you settled for less and, you know, you got a bad result out of it or resulted in a train wreck. So click that and you can ask Josh to put you through. Super chat here. Let's hit this one man's way. Sent $20. Thanks for that, brother. How much vetting should take place before being intimate with a woman? Good sex tends to mess up a man's decision-making skills. What do you think?
Yeah, well, there's two parts to this. One is exactly what you said. It messes up your decision-making skills. But then there's the whole Me Too era that we're in, where I got some heat from this several weeks back on the show because I suggested you wait 60 days before. I think I said 60 or 90 days before you even consider getting physical with a woman so that you can have a chance to know a little bit how nutty she is or how nutty she isn't. And I stand by that. I think we're in an age where a one night stand is ridiculously risky. And I say that from my clinical experience, having met guys who've had their lives turned upside down because they had a one night stand, even if they didn't initiate it. And so I'm very conservative on that front. And that really sucks because it wasn't that long ago you could have a one night stand. And as long as everybody's honest about what they're trying to achieve, fine, have a one night stand. But I think those days, at least for now, are gone. But I'll tell you personally, when I was younger, I would always hold out, and I was one of those guys where women sort of, I didn't think that I was good enough to attract a woman. So I was kind of aloof around women, and it turns out that attracted women. And so women, I never really had to pursue women. Women came after me, and I always held out because I saw growing up in the bar how destructive relationships can be, particularly when you're just getting started. And so I always was the holdout, and I would not put out very easily. Because I was suspicious. No, I was suspicious and I was skeptical. I wasn't a prude at all. God, I was a freak. But I was paranoid.
Josh is in the chat right now. He's going 60 days. Whoa, dudes! Like, I think the goal of most men is to like get to sex as quickly as possible, right?
Right.
It's like, you want to go to the car dealership and look at the car is one thing. You can walk around it, you can push the buttons and look at the price list and sit in it and, you know, touch a steering wheel, but you want to drive it, right? To decide whether or not you want to spend much time with it. So that's still my take on it. I mean, I think if you're upfront and honest about your intentions, what you're doing, you know, there's a lot of arguments around the risks of the Me Too versus maybe just going full on mode one and being fully transparent and honest with where you're going with it. And yeah, is there a risk? Sure. But you have to assess it. I mean, you know, you got to get smart about that. Maybe there's a entire topic that needs to be dedicated on that, or maybe in a video on minimizing the risks of a Me Too.
Yeah. And I agree that if that's your goal, then be very upfront about it, be very direct, and let it be known that you're a freak. But I lost it. I had a thought and I lost it. It'll come back to me in a minute.
We need to get a picture of Sean on a t-shirt with like a smile or something that says I'm a freak. Okay.
All right. So here's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Risk management. What is the definition of risk management? Risk is the effect of uncertainty on your future plans. And I didn't know that definition when I was younger, but I had the idea just because of what I'd seen, that too much risk can really derail you. And so my answer to it is, how much tolerance, how much appetite do you have for risk in this department? Mm-hmm. I liked risky things when I was younger, like going skydiving. I didn't like risk in my sex life because I'd seen so much destruction and I didn't want any part of it.
Yeah. You're talking about overestimating your value before. We kind of broke and put the link to StreamYard for people to join in. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
In the sexual marketplace?
That seems to be the driving force of most guys' attention on this topic anyway. So yeah, let's start into that.
Some old research, and I'm having to recall it, so I may not be recalling it exactly right, but it comes out of evolutionary psychology. And the gist of it is basically that men are designed to overestimate their success and how interesting they are. And okay, here's what it is. Sorry, let me back up. Men are designed to overestimate how interested a woman is in him. That's what it is. And so that keeps men trying.
Okay, so this is like bus sort of, you know, research?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what I've observed. It seems like guys tend to underestimate their value, generally speaking, and women tend to overestimate their value, generally speaking. So if you deem yourself a 7, for example, the other sex might be looking at you as an 8. Mm-hmm. But women, on the other hand, might view themselves as a 10. Mm-hmm. Whereas guys might look at them and say, nope, you're an 8, right?
Yeah.
But you're saying that men are designed from an evolutionary perspective to underestimate her attraction to him?
Well, if you believe this research, and I remember at the time that I read it, I checked it out and it seemed reasonable to me. But the two ideas are not contradictory. A guy could have very low self-regard and still overestimate how interested somebody is in him. So did you see the movie Joker?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a guy with very low self-regard, and he overestimates how interested in him the woman down the hall is, to the point where, well, I don't know if I won't give it away, but because maybe somebody hasn't seen it yet, but he greatly overestimates how interested she is, even though he regards himself as useless.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Guys, the link is there for StreamYard. Make sure you go through to Josh and get your audio and video checked out. Rob, we'll get to you in a second. I see you in the waiting area, so just stand by. Anything else we want to cover before we move to taking some calls, Sean, when it comes to the dangers of settling and potential train wrecks that might come out of that?
Yeah. The guy that you were talking earlier about, guys asking you about this quandary that they're in, there suddenly they find somebody in their life that wants to have a child, and should they settle for that? If you're asking yourself that sort of question, that's a hint to me, it seems. Don't you think, Rich, that just the presence of that question, should I settle? Should I do this thing that feels kind of weird to me? Probably a no.
Well, overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly, I often tell guys, like, look, I think you already had the answer to this question before you called me. You just wanted to run it up the flagpole and see if I would salute it or tell you that it was stupid, right?
Yeah. So good. And glad they did that.
Yeah. And And it's good that there's a soundboard where you can get something like that. But more often than not, I mean, your spidey senses are telling you what you're doing right or wrong. I mean, I tell guys all the time, listen to your intuition, but maybe I don't mention it enough. But, you know, if that little voice in your head, you know, that little whisper says, hey, man, you really think this is a good idea? Or you really want to wife up somebody that you barely had known for the last 12 months on a once a month basis and put a baby in her and she's 40 and her eggs are all dried up and you're 38. And is this really the best that I can do sort of thing? You know, that like it may not be that set of lyrics, but it's going to be something similar to that. And it's going to tell you to be a little more attentive to some of the choices that you make. Mm-hmm. I always tell dudes, like, you know, you definitely want to play to win when you're younger. You want to play to win, like take bigger risks, go all in when it comes to building something, at least up until about 35, 40. And it's after about 35, 40, maybe 45 or so, once you've made bank and you've made a lot of mistakes, you've had a lot of failures, that you want to start playing a little more defensively and you want to play not to lose, which isn't playing to lose, but it's like looking not to screw up, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, guys make the mistake of settling and they play not to lose younger when they should be playing to win, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, okay, good.
There's so be aware of your risk tolerance too.
Yeah.
The one night stand is, it introduces a tremendous amount of risk in your life. If you're cool with that, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just trying to stay on top of these comments, guys, here. If you want to throw us a super chat tonight, it's always welcome. Thanks. Rob, let's throw you into the stream over here. You have a question or experience to share?
Yeah. Just as far as the, I was talking to Josh offline with it there. It's kind of a question of, are you settling or are you over eager? Like it's, I had it in the chat earlier that it was a question of, I felt like I won the lotto because I'd been, you know, dating on and off. And then all of a sudden I get something that's hit all the boxes, younger than me, thin, fit, you know, odd, smarter than the average bear. And yeah, I think I got suckered just almost by the age of it. So realistically it was kind of a settle in that I didn't vet properly. And I just jumped, like winning the lottery, which
and
I
what
think
happened?
Is,
was there a train wreck out of that?
Oh yeah, it was a train wreck.
Well, yeah. The train wreck.
I paid for it. Kept the family house 50% with the daughter. I essentially took the house and took her debt and it was a wash. So it worked out good. I mean, it's actually living the dream divorce because there's no hostility. I see her all the time when my daughter's playing soccer. She's got two more kids now, because she was much younger than me. So with the new guy, she's had two more kids. You know, those two kids think of me like another dad they know, and they run up and they, you know, like it's pretty simple. I mean, those kids are my daughter's half, you know what I mean? So it's not a horrible situation. I even talk to him often enough. If I'm waiting for my daughter, we'll talk about how's work and yada, yada, yada. So
what's the lesson in the night that, so what's the lesson in this that guys can take away from your experience, right? Because this sounds like an experience share. So if you can distill it down for guys watching right now, what happens when you settle? What's the lesson and what would you do differently?
Oh, I'd qualify. And I mean, and what made me...
How much time did you spend qualifying, you know, before you put a baby in her and wifed her up?
Well, I did it in the right order. It was 03... I didn't have my daughter. It was like 3 years after we started dating that my daughter was born. So it was like, yeah, we were together for a year. It was an odd situation. She was going through a bad breakup with a little bit of a jerk. We worked together.
Oh, this is an office romance.
Yeah. So I had her.
What's the age difference?
We were in different departments, 18 years.
18 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So she was really young. Okay.
Yeah. I was 42 and she was 23 or something like that.
Okay. And what were the red flags? Like, why did it fall apart?
Well, there was a whole bunch of things. I went into a totally blue pill, you know, bought the dream, the Disney happy wife, happy life, do everything, you know, to keep her happy and whatever. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, and even at the time, I thought that this was just a massive pile of circumstances. You know, those books, Sean, you probably know them, the most stressful things in a person's life, death of a family member, marriage, building a house, selling a house, changing jobs, you know, getting engaged, getting married, having a kid, the most stressful things. Well, she and I did everything but death of in the family in a year and a half. Rented a house, bought a new house, got married, got pregnant. She changed jobs. I changed jobs. We moved. We went from the big town to a, you know, the just slightly out of town. It was a lot of turmoil. And yeah.
How old are you now, Rob?
56.
Okay. How long ago did you guys split up?
Oh, 10 years ago.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, my daughter was only two. So.
So what lesson can you give people watching this right now? I mean, what would you tell them to do differently? You're at work. There's a girl that's 18 years your junior. She's smoking hot. She comes over to your desk flirting with you. What do you do?
Well, I just went through that. Got ghosted here about a week and a half ago. A coworker, again, different department. Never met her before other than on this particular project. Guessed she was 40-ish, maybe. Again, nobody wears makeup or anything at work. It's kind of a dirty job. But anyway, asked her out, grabbed her number. We chatted here and there, and I just took her number. It turned into just with text game. First
Let me just
date.
Stop you for a minute, Rob. Sean, what's your take on office romance stuff?
It introduces a lot of risk.
Mm-hmm.
Expand a little bit for us.
Well, you're combining your worlds. And so if things go wrong in one world, it affects the other world much more than it would otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen much success with great differences? Like, it can work on a physical basis, right? You know, older guy, you know, younger girl, he's got a little bit of season, wisdom in him. Everything's working for him still. And he's got a younger hottie that's, you know, digging his vibe, right? But on a long-term basis, how successful are those types of dynamics where you've got like an 18-year spread between your ages, right?
The relationship's tough to maintain because you end up with some values differences and you run out of things to talk about if you're not careful. But I have seen it work. I've talked to some guys who – I want to be careful here. I've talked to some guys –
I always laugh when you say
that. Well, there's someone I'm thinking of and I don't want to – divulge too much information, but I have talked to guys where there is this age difference and the two people are very upfront about the fact that one person likes to mentor and the other person wants a mentor. And mm-hmm. as long as you're having that conversation and you acknowledge that that's a foundational piece of the relationship, it can work and be prepared for that to evolve and change because the younger person may get to a point where they're not really looking for a mentor anymore. They're sort of wanting to spread their wings and that changes everything. So you got the
value. You don't have any other kids, Rob?
Pardon me?
You don't have any other kids, Rob?
No, just one daughter.
Okay. So was that like a, you know, decision that you made at that time? Just like, all right,
no, that was
settling, that, you know, this should be good enough.
No. There was a conversation before the split when stuff was going sideways that, you know, there weren't going to be any more, you know, my daughters, she mentioned, or my ex said something along the lines of, you know, she's at an age, it'd be good to have a sister or a brother. And she was essentially announcing, we're not having more kids because this is coming apart.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that, and again, these aren't clues that I acted on. Like, those are the times where I should have said, you know, something stronger. Again, but it's that back off. Happy wife, happy life. I seriously did not know how to deal with this coming apart and a daughter. And you're worried about, well, there goes the house. There goes the, you know, you automatically get into this negative cycle. And that's where the danger is. Rather than investigating it, talking to a lawyer, which I did after it exploded.
Did you have a prenup or a cohab agreement before you guys moved in?
No. Well, we technically moved in whatever. Again, I said she had a bad breakup with a guy and there was some swinging and some whatever, and he chased her down the lawn. And I just said, she got on her cell phone and she said, well, he's chasing me down the highway. And I said, okay, well, you drive over here. It's two rights. You won't have any lights. You pull in, there's a police station there. Pull into the police station. He'll drive by. So, you come back out, come to my house.
Okay. So Rob, let me just stop you there. So like you're talking and I mean, the story's starting to give me a headache.
I know. It gave me one.
I mean, like you're talking about wifing up a woman that you work with. So it's an office romance, 18 years younger. You're dealing with some crazy boyfriend. Like you're playing Captain Save-A-Ho because she's got the crazy boyfriend chasing her and she's bringing drama into your life. Like she's making her problems your problems. But you look past all of this because she's 18 years younger and she's hot.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there's no ugly 23-year-olds, right? Like there's not a lot of ugly 23-year-olds.
Yeah.
I mean, today there are more now, but...
Yeah.
Before toxic feminism, there's not a lot of ugly 23-year-olds.
Yeah, Rich, I'll admit, the age difference and her youth was an attraction. Her personality was an attraction. But I didn't see the pattern of the monkey branching until I was the third monkey branch, and then that came unglued.
Did you feel like wow, this chick actually gets me?
Yeah, wow, like I mean, things like age didn't even come up. Like, I don't, shit, I think we were living together before she found out how. No. Again, she just was brought up on the Disney dream, single mother, blah, blah, blah.
Raised by a single mom?
And the single mom got strung along for a while.
Got it. Okay, Rob, thanks for sharing the experience. I got to move because I got a bunch of other people waiting and I got a big super chat that I want to hit. Thanks a lot for sharing that.
Deal, anytime.
All right. Thanks, man. See ya. W8F question. I'll get to you in just one second. Guys, if you just scroll up, I've posted the join link if you want to ask a question on the live broadcast. And we got a very generous $100 super chat from One Man's Way. Any tips on getting over a failed business to get back on the horse and not settle for my boring six-figure job? Yeah, you know what? You should actually give me a buzz on Playing to Win. Not this Thursday, but next Thursday we'll be on. But that's a great question for that show. But I'll spend a minute on it. Just thank you. Yeah, dude, like a winner is a guy that just didn't lose, you know, like one extra time, right? I mean, if you do something five times and you lose, some people just quit at the fifth time and say, okay, I'm done, I'm out. But it's the one guy that goes six times that will become the winner. Like that's all that a winner really is a guy that didn't quit. So you've just got to understand how to tackle it. Again, if you're younger, you can still play to win. And I'm guessing by your picture, you're still a young guy. But if you're younger, you can still play hard to win. So you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to lose out. I mean, you're going to fall down. Just get back up, you know, dust off the shoulder, get back up and carry on. But take the loss or losses that you had as a lesson. I always say, don't lose, learn, right? There's a silver lining in every piece of crap that comes your way in your life. Get a lot of lemons, make some lemonade or lemon meringue pie. I'm a big fan of lemon meringue pie, actually. Sean, you want to hit on that?
Yeah, one of the differences between people who develop PTSD and people who don't develop PTSD. In fact, an old VA guy, Veteran Administration psychiatrist, told me this one time, don't drink and talk about it. So meaning that when you go through something that is traumatic, like losing a business has got to be pretty traumatic. It hasn't happened to me, but I can imagine it really shakes your confidence in your self-worth probably the first time it happens. So if you don't numb it away and run away from the thoughts and the, you know, all the crap that's coming up in your head, and you start making sense of the story. So you know what happened, why it happened, what your role in it was, what you controlled, what you didn't control. If you put all these words to it and you make the story, then that makes it a lot easier to get back on the horse again, whatever it is.
And let me just add to that, because sometimes a failure is not a failed business, but it's a failure to pivot the business. I was lucky because the first I mean, I ran a couple of businesses when I was younger. I did paper routes, and I contracted out some kids to help me with paper routes. And I had a car detailing business in high school and a couple other things. But my real, like my first real stab at it where I made like serious money, like first year I did like 300 and something thousand. Actually, it wasn't even a year. It was in like 10 months. So I had a wicked launch out of the gate. But I had to pivot. I'm going to say 15 months into the business, then I had to pivot again, another 36 months into the business, and I had to pivot again, roughly another 70 to 80 months into the business, into a totally different direction. And if I didn't have the wherewithal to pivot at the time, at the right time, it would have been a failure about four or five times. So sometimes you also have to look at other opportunities and not just call it a hard loss, but it's like, okay, you know, you can go down a road and there's a dead end, but maybe you can detour left sort of thing and beat a new path, if that makes sense.
Resilient people know how to change.
Yeah. Actually, there's a great book. I think his name is Tim S. Grover, and I believe it's called Relentless. Check that out. It's a great book. Actually got another super chat here. We're going to get you guys in the calls in just a minute. San Diego Garcia, $50 Mexican says, if there's not lifting, chasing excellence, you're settling for something. Not going to disagree with that. By the way, guys, YouTube tends to demonetize or limit or run limited ads on these. So super chats help out a ton, with us to run the show. So want to thank you a huge amount and shout out to you. Thank you. WF8 question. I'm going to throw you on live so you can fire away. Go ahead. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. Hey, Rich. Hey, Sean.
Hey.
I was actually laughing a lot along before when Sean was saying that he was aloof and you made an assumption that he was prude and he was like laughing, because I'm the same. I'm like aloof around girls, but I have like twisted sexual thoughts. But anyway, so my question is more of a sexual nature. So I don't want to like settle for a girl who is like not willing to experiment more sexually in bed and maybe have my needs met. Mm-hmm. And because I have more like kinky interests, like what would be an appropriate time to like how far along in the process of getting to know a girl would it be like appropriate to disclose that stuff and like see if she's willing to try out more stuff in the bedroom, because I feel like that's a huge part of my interests in regards
to. I'd say if it's a huge part, then make it so within the first couple of dates, like the first date or two, you know, at the right moment. Like, okay. Why would you just leave it for, you know, a couple months in somebody that you're not digging? She's not that adventurous. What do you think, Shaw?
Yeah, I agree. I'll let your freak flag fly, man. But I got a question for you. Is this just about bedroom activity, or is this more of a lifestyle dominant submissive extending beyond the bedroom?
No, it is about like submission and dominance, but I wouldn't say that it's extending beyond the bedroom. It's like strictly in the bedroom, I would say.
Strictly in the bedroom.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So then I agree. You'd want to get it out there pretty early. Not in the first conversation, obviously, but yeah, you want to get it out there so that it's not a surprise. And if it was more of a lifestyle thing, then wouldn't be so much of an issue, because that would be part of the relationship starting up, is the dominance, the power, the power exchange, that sort of thing. So,
okay.
Without getting into too much detail, because you have to assume this is like, you know, pretend this is like the family restaurant. There's a family over here having dinner. They might listen to the conversation, but what kind of freak are you talking about here?
Okay. Well, it's hard to answer with that, with the family in the background.
Well, I'll just water it down a little bit for us.
Well, so okay. Light bondage, heavy bondage. We don't need to get into too much specifics.
Okay, like light bondage, maybe some choking, and anal and stuff like that.
Okay, so I mean, like, you want to run the show then, like you want to be the dominant.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're basically talking about a dom sub sort of situation.
Yeah.
But not lifestyle, confined to the bedroom.
No, confined to the bedroom.
Yeah, so you just... You know, it's an opening conversation, and you know, in the first couple of dates. So, hey, you know, this is one of the things that's really important. What's your thoughts on that?
Okay. Yeah.
Seriously, dude. Like, hey, listen. If she's out with you, she obviously digs your vibe, right? Unless she's trying to get a free meal and you're taking out to dinner on the first date, and don't ever do that. Watch my video on why you only take them out for drinks or coffee. But yeah, it's like, I mean, you've already got a shoe in. It's just like the conversation of sex is going to come at some point. So it's, why not just have it and say, hey, look, these are the things that I really like to do. What are your thoughts on it?
Okay.
Just get comfortable with it, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Makes sense?
I think you're right. Yeah. Openness is good.
Right. I mean, everybody else is lying about other stuff, so why not be open about it? Just cruise on in. Okay. Hey, baby. So what do you think of fuzzy handcuffs? And I got this whip thing over here. Check it out. First time she comes over, man, show her your gear. Okay, I'm not perfect. Kidding. Show her your gear, man. If she's, if she's good to go, then you'll probably get down with it.
Yeah. That's just right. Like, I have that terrifying scenario in my head where I do, where she's just opening the door and like running out and screaming that I'm a maniac. But nah.
Dude, women, 50 Shades of Grey was the fastest selling book of all time. And that's all that book is about.
Yeah, that's true.
Women crave this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm with Rich. I would wade in a little more subtly. I would start with some general themes, like I like to be dominant in the bedroom. What do you think of that? I don't know that I'd whip out the handcuffs, but Rich is a different guy than me. He'd whip out the handcuffs, and he's right, man. The 50 Shades of Grey was bigger than the Beatles, and they were bigger than Jesus. So therefore, you do the math.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I appreciate the encouragement. Thank you.
All right, man. See you.
See ya.
I should mention. Guys, that link is there available, so make sure you click through if you got a question, and Josh will make sure your audio and videos are good. Where did I put it here? So I've got my newsletter set up, by the way. So it's actually pinned in the top description of the YouTube channel, the first comment. If you just open that and expand it, there's a link, you can just click it. If you put your email address in there, I've put my chapter on 19 red flags, okay? This book is going to get done, come hell or high water. I'm probably the worst author on the planet, but it's going to get done. So that chapter is just about done. It is done. But if you want to pick up on the red flags that I have noticed the most through coaching sessions, my own experience, and a lot of these before the train wrecks and other types of series that we've done, join on that list and read those 19 flags. So that'll save you a lot of questions calling in on regular basic stuff. It's just simple stuff. Sean, let's see if we have any other super chats here that I might have missed. Rolo Tomasi says he has unconventional needs. What does that mean, Rolo? Okay, actually, hey, you know what, guys? There's no super chats for me to go through, and there's nobody else on the line. So let's keep rapping about when men settle.
All right,
what's another area that causes train wrecks?
You put out this video this week, and I really liked it. You were talking about this ball player. I don't know who it is. Is he an American ball player, or is he playing soccer or something like that?
Ball player, which one?
We were talking about the ball player on Instagram where he was.
Oh, yeah, that's Lewis House. He's actually an Olympic handball player was what he was.
Handball. Okay.
I think he was a football player at one time, and he had an injury, and then he ended up sleeping on his sister's couch. So he has like the "I lived on my sister's couch for a number of months" story, and then he kind of built his business up from there. So he's been quite successful, right? Like, he's, so
when you say football in Canada, what do you mean?
It's the same football you guys play, man. It's that pigskin. Okay. The football in everywhere else in the world is the one you kick with your foot.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So you put out this video talking about the fact that he was taking these Instagram pictures with his very attractive girlfriend, and that on her Instagram feed, there was no reciprocation.
Correct.
And I thought it was a really, I liked the video because you're basically talking about looking at words versus looking at behavior. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what she's whispering in his ear, but her behavior was certainly not reciprocal in the sense that she wasn't presenting herself as part of a couple where he was.
Yeah.
So,
Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was going to add to that. So since I published that, I've noticed in the comments, because they're still rolling in, somebody mentioned and linked to it that she recently posted a picture of them together. And they said, I think they've seen your video.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So I wonder
So it's finally been reciprocated. So good for Lewis.
Okay. Yeah, but she was definitely putting out some
Yeah, she was putting out a lot of, hey, look at me signals. And he was putting out a whole lot of blue-pilled, plugged-in sort of lovey-dovey, this is the best I've ever had sort of thing. Yeah. And that's dangerous. So if you haven't seen that video, I published it like the middle of last week around Wednesday. So just go back and check that out.
So can I talk about a you sent me a little snippet of a conversation that you had with a guy earlier this week.
Yeah, go ahead.
This was a guy. Well, maybe you should set it up, so because I don't want to divulge anything you don't want divulged.
Yeah, here, let me grab the message that I sent you. And Andy, we'll get to you in just 1 second there in the chat. Just hold on. Got to dig you up there. There it is. So you want to deal with the social anxiety part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I am my own producer, so you guys just gonna have to bear with me because that's how it goes. Anyway, so he said social anxiety on the sexual marketplace, and he expanded to go on to detail. From his own personal experience, I deal with social anxiety, have been doing the work to conquer it, but it does pop up from time to time. That said, social anxiety is where you settle with somebody you're either not attracted to or somebody who may have had a few red flags that you brush off as quirks. Wasn't that long ago that I'd do this.
Okay.
So you've been set up. Mm-hmm. Chime in.
All right. So I was reading that scenario and thinking about social anxiety, and social anxiety is a little bit different for everybody, and it's a little bit the same for everybody. And I think what most people with social anxiety would tell you is that they don't struggle with maintaining the relationship. Once you're connected with somebody, it's fine, but it's starting the relationship that social anxiety can really impede. And so I was thinking about this guy, and I never really considered it this way, that if you're having trouble starting relationships, then yeah, that this condition could conceivably really contribute to you settling for something that you shouldn't be settling for.
So, I mean, do you think there's a good chunk of dudes out there that have settled for, like, you know, the example that he was using was settling for women that you're not attracted to? And I've had this question come up, right? Like, I've had guys ask me, you know, like, what if you just find somebody that's just good enough, right? Like, is that a smart move? Like, if you've got low desirability for it, well, let me just flip it around for a sec. Andy, I'm really sorry I'm making you wait this long in the area, but I'm going to get you in a second. But I put out this piece a couple of years ago, and of course, it's, you know, it gets pushed down in the rankings. But the piece basically was, is make sure she has genuine burning desire for you, right? Mm-hmm. So on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest level of desire and 1 being the lowest level of desire, a 6 and under is basically a detractor, right? They just have nothing good to say. They're not interested in you. 7s or 8s are more or less passive, and 9s and 10s are going to essentially be promoters. So a woman that has a desire level of at least a 9 or a 10 is going to be a promoter of you. They're going to think about you. They're going to send you a good morning text. They're going to send you naughty pictures. They're going to do everything that it takes to get your attention because they're going to want to be with you. Now, flip side of the coin, if you do that with women, let's say she's a 6 on the desire scale. Like, you're just like, whatever, you know, she's good enough. You've got enough attraction to her that, I don't know, you want to take her out or you can get wood or whatever. Right. What's your thoughts on that? Like, what's the potential train wreck that could happen if you settle for somebody that you're just not that attracted to?
Sexless marriage. I mean, that's the ultimate horrible outcome. Right.
But are men actually falling into sexless marriages because they're wifing up somebody that they're not attracted to, or is it because the women are settling for guys that they're not attracted to and he's just good enough?
I personally have seen more examples of guys getting into sexless marriages because they knocked somebody up and now they have a wife and things go downhill from there.
And what about the level of desire the wife has for him? Is it 9, 10?
It was real high one night.
Well,
decreased.
It doesn't have to be that high. I mean, it could be a 7. Yeah, you know, yeah. She could be indifferent. It's just he was there and he was the right guy at the right time and he was good enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This is why you got to wait. This is why I'm doubling down on my 60-day rule before you even consider sex, because there's so many things to be looking for to lower the level of risk, and desirability would be on the list there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Dr. Shanti Smith, a traditional conservative.
Damn it. That's me.
All right, Andy, we're going to throw you on, brother. All right, you got a question for us?
Yeah. So this isn't more so like anything to do with women, but it still is related to selling for less.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm an engineering technology student. I actually live in Ontario, Canada. And so with the position I'm in, like I'm graduating at the end of the year, I could choose to go to work and not do any more schooling after.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also choose to keep doing more schooling and get my engineering degree.
Okay. And what's the ask here?
So I'm asking here if I'm just settling for less, if I'm deciding to just go to work after and being paid less and not have any debt, or to keep going to school.
How old are you?
I'm 22.
And you're talking about two different paths. So path A, paint that picture, then path B, paint the picture of going to school.
Okay, so path A is I graduate, no debt. I go into work and get paid less money.
What's that less money?
I'm talking about under $100,000 each year.
Okay, and then take me down the other path where you get more education.
Path B, more education, which will require more debt. But it'll be easier for me in the long run if I get my engineering degree, because I have an opportunity to make more money,
mm-hmm.
and which will have more opportunities, and I'll have like more control in what I'm doing.
And how much more money do you make, and how much debt do you have?
Right now, I don't have any debt.
Right. But if you go down the path, you said you're going to have more debt. So how much debt would you have during going down the other path, making more money? And how much more money would you make over six figures?
So if I go down the path of doing more schooling, it all depends if I go out of town for school or not, but probably $50,000 at the most.
In debt?
Yeah.
Okay. And how much more money would you make?
I would make a six-figure income. It all depends on whether if I start my own company or not and where I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sean, what do you think?
This sounds like a math problem, and so I'm wondering if we separate out the math problem, what are your thoughts about yourself, and do you have the confidence that you could go down the better path, the mathematically more sound path?
Well, it will require a lot of work, and if I want to do it, I'll find a way.
Is that your history, that you find a way to get things done?
Yeah.
What do your supervisors say about you and your professors?
They say like they'll respect me for like any path I choose, but they do recommend.
What do they say about your performance? What kind of guy are you?
What kind of guy am I?
Yeah.
Well, things don't come easy to me, so that's where my work ethic comes in. Uh-huh. So I'm a hard worker.
Is that what they would say about you?
Yeah.
What else would they say? Would they say that you're a nice guy? Or would they say that you have what it takes to go for what you want? Or what would they say about your personality?
They would say I'm a nice guy. I tend to be kind to people. They would say I'm an effective communicator.
Mm-hmm. You know the difference between kindness and being a nice guy in the Robert Glover sense of the word?
Yeah, I read that book.
Okay. So you're a kind person. Are you a nice guy?
I used to be, recovering.
Good.
Hey, Andy, I got a question. What does your dad say about all this?
My dad? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have much of an opinion on it.
Why not?
I'm not too sure.
What does he do?
Huh?
What does your dad do?
He's a sales rep.
Okay. You're talking about two different paths, and you sound real low-key. You sound like you're a more like play it safe kind of guy, right? Like you'd rather play not to lose than play to win. And at the end of the day though, Andy, I mean, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Never let school get in the way of your education. Okay. There's a guy that has a great little video on it. His name's Suli Breaks, S-U-L-I, and then Breaks, B-R-E-A-K-S. And I believe the title is Never Let School Get in the Way of Your Education. So you should watch that. But, I mean, if you've got more of an entrepreneurial drive, like you feel like you've got this burning desire to create a business or to start something up, you're not going to get that with another piece of paper on the wall. You're not going to get that with 50 grand in debt and another $25,000 a year. Like if you're talking 100 grand today versus going to school for another 3 years and 50 grand in debt and making 125 grand, you're not talking about that great of a difference. Like it's not going to put a big dent in your universe, right? Like most people, I think the happiness level is something around 80,000. Like if you make $80,000 a year, like you're about as happy as you can get. Just making more money than that lets you buy cooler shit and funner toys. So that's not going to change a whole hell of a lot, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and actually, one of my professors, he took the same thing I did. And he doesn't have his engineering degree, and he has his own infrastructure company.
Mm-hmm. Well, dude, I mean, if you want to make bank, if you want to put a dent in the universe, if you want to be in the driver's seat, that's the only way to do it now. Now today is to create your own thing. You're never going to find a high level of self-actualization when probably working for anybody. I'm not saying 100% of the time. There's some people that do, but for the most part, if you really want to, you know, grab life by the horns, that's the only way to do it.
Do you think you have that entrepreneurial spirit?
I would say so, yes. I hate taking orders from other people.
Right, but I mean, you're also describing yourself as a worker bee. So just to be the devil's advocate and beat down my own narrative, whenever somebody says that they're a good worker, I always think worker bee, which to me, from my own experience, and I've run several departments. I mean, I've probably had well over 200 people work under me over the last, I don't know, 25 years. But whenever somebody's like describing themselves as worker B, to me, they're like a B level employee, right? Like they don't play to win. So just make sure that you're the guy that people come to solve problems, right? Because when you're the guy that's not replaceable, that's the guy that is going to go and start his own business, right? Like that's the guy that's of supreme value. The worker bees can be replaced very, very easily. Like there's lots of worker bees out there, right? So you have to be better than the worker bee.
Okay.
So Andy, let me ask you, in this scenario, which one of the paths feels like settling to you?
Good question.
That is a good question. Honestly, they kind of go hand in hand, because even if I do more schooling to get my degree, like I don't know where that's going to take me. And, you know, maybe I just get some job that pays a good amount. And that's what it kind of feels like settling. But if I don't do any more schooling after, I guess I'll know that if I'm just working for someone else, I'm not going to make that much money. So that's playing not to lose kind of thing.
Right. So you're facing a choice of risk versus security.
Yeah.
So Andy, sorry, I looked up the title. It's Suli Breaks, and it's Why I Hate School But Love Education. Watch that video. It's got like 10 million views. It's real cool.
Okay.
Okay, cool. We got somebody else in the waiting area. Thanks for your question, Andy. I'll let you go. Sorry, Sean, did you have anything else to just mention him before he's gone?
Yeah, the reason I was asking about what other people think about him is because we're on this question of settling and taking less than your worth. And we are usually the worst judges of what we're worth. And there are a couple of personality traits that get in the way of understanding what we're worth. And one of them is agreeableness. And there's these big five personality traits that Jordan Peterson talks about all the time. And I'm glad he's out there talking about them, because now everybody knows what they are for the most part. There's openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Those are the five. And among those five, agreeableness can really interfere with your sense of what you can accomplish in the world. And that is the tendency to say yes and when you shouldn't say yes, and put other people's needs above your own. And the other one is neuroticism, which is just the tendency toward negative emotion. Everybody has sort of this emotional thermostatic setting that they have. And some people are just generally feel better about themselves. Some people generally feel worse about themselves, but those two things can really blind you to what your potential actually is. So if you're in a position like this guy's in, where he's a little bit unclear and he sounds pretty low key and he's a recovering nice guy, I'd be checking in with other people on what I'm actually worth, because they're probably to some degree a better judge than I am. Maybe not your peers, but people who are above you, who don't have anything to lose by telling you the truth. And maybe they're actually invested in your success. They can help you know whether or not you're settling, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sean, I'm going to throw you in the stream and we'll get to
the guys, how you doing?
In a second. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Nothing much here. I'm actually in the same, I'm going to be doing the same thing that this guy's doing. That's actually why I called in here. I'm going to be doing a electrical engineering thing at a local trade school. And I guess I'm just wondering right now as if I'm settling for that, because I mean, I had really high marks in high school. I just graduated in 2019 from high school, and I feel like I'm almost settling by just going to trade school. I can't afford right now to go to university, and I'm taking a semester off of school right now, working about 45, 50 hours a week in order to pay for the next 2 years of school here. And I see all my friends right now, you know, they're having fun, they're having a blast, and I'm just out here by myself. Don't have too much of a social life here. I mean, what I'm doing here is it going to be worth it, I guess, in order to escape this college debt thing that a lot of my friends are going to be getting themselves into here.
How old are you?
I'm 18. I'm 18. Oh,
okay. And yep. What sort of trade do you want to get into?
Oh, it's not a trade. It's electrical engineering. Okay. That's what, so it's just funny because it's the same exact thing that, I know what the guy was talking about before, Andy, I think his name was, so.
Yeah, yeah. But he's in Canada, so he's going to run 50 grand in debt for his next degree. What would it cost for you to get yours?
If I go to the trade school here for my first 2 years, it'd be just under 10,000, I want to say. And I got about 3 or 4 saved right now. And I will have enough money to pay for my associates in full by January.
And is that one of those trades that pays you like 50 bucks an hour or?
No, it's not a trade. It is a trade. My bad. It makes about, I want to say 55 to 60 a year. My job title would be electrical engineer technician 2 or something like that. So, I mean, my plan would be to transfer to a 4-year university after that and finish up my degree there and get my bachelor's with that. So, I mean, I guess am I making the right move here by going to trade school and saving money here? Or because, I mean, the schools,
what's the school
that I'm looking into, I'd be able to go to university. And it's around, with FAFSA and everything added up, it's something like 25 or 30,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So, and it just scares the crap out of me because I'm not getting any help from my parents. No one's helping. I mean, I'm living rent free.
What do you want to be doing in the next 5 to 10 years?
What do I want to be doing? You know, I don't quite know. I just want to.
You should probably You should probably start with some clarity around that question, right? There's a lot of guys that just settle. Okay, again, the show is about settling, right? Like when a guy settles for less, and you just kind of settle for what you think is the best choice. But I'm wondering what it is that you really want to be doing in the next 5 to 10 years. Because if you want to hit that target, you better start designing your life now, right?
Right. So yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yep, I think so. I'm just going to school or starting up. I mean,
We used to do this exercise called a painted picture, and then my business coach called it the vivid vision. And basically you would lay out maybe like a 3 or 4 page document. You'd lean 3 years into the future. This was the planning. So you'd lean 3 years into the future, and you basically design what your business would look like, what areas you would serve, how the media would recognize you, what your customers thought of you, what your suppliers would think of you, what your employers thought of you, or sorry, what your employees would think of you. And you'd basically paint this vivid image of the sort of business that you would want to run. And I think that a good exercise for you right now would be to lean into the future, maybe let's say 5 years, right? And then paint a vivid picture of the kind of life that you want to design. And then start doing things that lead to that. Because that's the easiest way for you to get what it is that you want. I'm not a big fan of like, do A, B, C, and D. It's like, just paint a picture of what the end looks like. And then start doing things every single day that gets you to that goal, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess if we're going to paint a picture here, I think I've had the idea of myself of wanting to be a doctor one day. So maybe going to med school one day, and I just feel like I'm almost inferior.
Why are we talking about electrical engineering stuff then?
Because just something I'm interested in. I've always liked design and such like that. And you can have any degree to go to med school, and I just thought engineering. Why not? I just really just like designing stuff, like working on cars, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm a mechanic, so.
Well, I've done that work too, but you know, you breathe in a shitload of dangerous chemicals in your lungs.
Tell me about it. I know.
So paint that picture. You know, like vividly paint something that you want to live in about 5 to 10 years time. You know, you can go 10 years as well if you want, but, and then start doing things that lead you up to that. Right. And don't let anything get in the way. Don't let a chick get in the way that wants to get married at 21 years old.
Right.
Don't let some dumb choices get in the way that might knock you back 5 or 10 years from something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Absolutely. I don't know. It's just, I mean, it's just tough. Cause I mean, I'm a pretty serious athlete too. I ran cross and track all 4 years of high school, and it's like, I feel like it's almost swaying me to want to go to university and just run up the bills like that. Cause I'd like to run in college. I'm still running every day and I'd like to run for a team. And it's just really hard for me right now, just working and then running. I feel like I almost have no social life, I guess. This is just my life now. You know,
We have electrical engineer, we have doctor, we have athlete. Chime in for us, Ron.
Yes or no? Are you going to medical school?
It's the hope one day.
You going? Hope. Yes or no? You going?
Yeah. Yes, I'm going. Yes.
You're going. When do you want to be enrolled in medical school?
Sometime in the next 5 years, as soon as I finish my bachelor's.
Okay. So what's going to get you there with the least amount of financial damage?
Going to trade school and then, working and such and paying off that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it seems like the smart choice right now. I just feel like my vision's almost getting clouded right now because all my friends are out having fun and I'm just here kind of just working hard, you know, it's just kind of sucks. I mean, I'm just hoping that all pays off, I suppose. I guess that's my fear.
Let's check in with your friends in about 4 years when you've got a degree and you're making money and you're on your path and you don't have much debt. And they have spent the last 4 years paying 30 grand a year for a social life.
See, that's the thing. And this is just incredibly tough right now because, I mean, that's part of the reason why I called in. I don't have a social life. If I'm just being completely honest, in high school, everything was set up for me. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to school, right? Then I go to practice after school is over, and then I go work maybe 2 or 3 days a week, and you know I got my fun money or whatever, and go out on the weekends after the meet. You know, it's just like everything was set up, and now I'm finding myself. I have to set myself up if I want to go out and meet other people. I have to go out of my way to go do something, if that makes sense. And it's just it's very difficult for me to just try and learn all this stuff, and I don't know. I mean, it's just hard, and I hope I'm making the right choice here.
So you're struggling with. If the social life wasn't an issue, it sounds like you know what your path would be. The social life is getting in the way. This sounds like what Rich is talking about. This could be the thing that derails you. And it sounds like a problem that can be solved. You can learn how to go out and have a social life and you don't have to spend 30 grand a year to do it.
Am I right? Yeah. Yes. I agree with you completely on that.
Is your old man in the picture?
I'm sorry?
Is your father in the picture?
He's a recovering alcoholic. Parents just got divorced last year. He's kind of there, kind of not. Goes job to job kind of deal.
Right. So somewhat. So Sean, just to add a little bit more to this, because I got the private chat. There's Andy and Ryan in there talking about a couple of useful points. He says, don't be surprised if you lose all your friends from high school in 3 years. It happens to many people. And Ryan also says, I don't talk to anyone from high school anymore. So there's going to be anchors and sales now, you know, in your life, because now that you're out of the school system, you're 18, you're looking to design this life of excellence for yourself. It really sounds to me like you should be playing to win. It sounds to me like you're a guy that wants to chase excellence, because most 18-year-old guys are not calling in asking these questions, right?
Yeah.
I think the youngest guy we ever had call in was like 14. So you're asking all the right questions, but there's going to be people right now in your lives, and you know, you're going to be the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And if there's people that are anchors, you need to cut them loose, right? So if there's people holding you back that want to drag you back, they're always like crabs in a bucket, right? They don't want to see you win. And there's going to be people you're going to have to let go along the way. Like you just lose their phone numbers. You don't respond to them anymore. If they're zeros, you just have to get rid of them. I mean, if you want to be with the heroes, you got to get rid of the zeros, right? If you want to fly like an eagle, you got to get rid of the turkeys, right? You can't surround yourself with a bunch of turkeys. So just remember that last part before you get off this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's hard. I just need that extra motivation there to just stay the course here. Cause I mean, it's just incredibly, I mean, it's just difficult just doing all this by myself here and seeing what everyone else is doing. Right. And then I have my own set of goals here and I think I'm making the right choice. It's just, it's hard to just go my own path right? Whatever while everyone else is kind of doing their thing.
Whatever you're pointing to and calling hard right now, there's millions of people out there right now that would love to exchange their shitty life for whatever you're calling hard right now. So don't let it get in your way. Like, don't make excuses. Go get the results. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right,
Sean. Thanks.
All right, thank you guys very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
He's a cool kid. I like that. We got a bunch of people waiting. Ryan, you'll be up next, and then 888. And I think there's one more there. But let me get through these super chats. There's a few that rolled in. So thanks again for those guys. I have a question. When you have a chance, what kind of prenup can we make or build to protect ourselves from the Duluth model of pain, Texas father and sons? What do you think, Sean?
I got to parse that question. I don't quite understand it. What's he asking?
I have a question. When you have a chance, what kind of prenup can we make to build or protect ourselves from the, you can't, you can't design any kind of prenuptial agreement that is going, like, you can deal with the assets. So the certainty that you can get out of a prenup, if you continue to renew it, and you get a postnup, which is a lot of legal work. So you need a prenup like 6 months before you get married. You need a postnup to firm up the prenup after you get married. And then as time goes on, you have to update it. So if 5 years down the road, 5 years has passed, you live in a different house, you've acquired new assets, maybe you've transferred assets, your wife has a job, maybe there's kids starting to come in the picture, maybe they're in the picture. You need to keep updating the prenup to govern the assets, but you can't deal with access to your kids. There is no protection from that whatsoever. The Duluth model of pain, as you call it, all she has to do is point and sputter at you and claim domestic violence, and you can be hauled away in handcuffs from your own home and not be able to see your kids for quite a long period of time. And then all of a sudden that becomes a status quo, and the courts deem that that is what's going to happen. The kids will be with the mom. So there's no real way to protect yourself from any of those things as far as I can see. I mean, you can only write prenups to deal with division of assets, right? So if you bring $1 million to the table and she's bringing $10,000 in a rusted out Toyota Corolla, you should have a prenup, right? You don't want to be giving her half your shit at that point. Do you want to add to that one, Sean?
Yeah, just that the Duluth model is part of the criminal justice system. You don't want the criminal justice system in your life, period. And so it wouldn't become a part of your life unless, like you said, she called the police and accused you of domestic violence. Then the Duluth model is part of your life. But this is why we vet very carefully for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
So we don't lose our Honda Corolla.
Honda Corolla, yeah. There's another super chat there. I'm not sure what you mean, though. He says, I'm an electrical engineer's MS. Strange advice, but thanks for the super chat. Got one here from, no, teach the kids, if you walk once on water, they will expect it all the effing time. It will destroy you. You must go in low and smooth. Electrical is okay. Do in-seas studies, not something to be thrown at 30 when burnt. Yes, he is doing great. Not sure I'm following that one either.
No, but what I like about him, what was that kid's name? I feel bad now. 18-year-old.
Andy, and there was Sean as well.
Yeah. So what I like about, Sean, what I like about Sean is he's 18 years old and he's going to go into this trade school and get a useful skill. 18-year-old guys without skills are a dime a dozen, and 22-year-old guys who've gone through college and don't have any practical skills are a dime a dozen, but he's going to be 19, 20 years old, and he's going to have something that he can use to make actual money, and then he can leapfrog off of that, and it sounds like he's on a really good path.
Yep. Let me churn through these so we can get to Ryan. We got another one here. It says, learn to code, kids. I hire new software engineers at 80 to 100,000 from good schools. Or you could be like Jay and run the software engineer company and be making such a huge multiple you can afford to pay kids from good schools 100 grand a year. Thanks, Jay, for the super chat. Appreciate it.
Well, to code, that's hate speech now, isn't it? You're not supposed to say that out loud.
Yeah, no kidding. Fine, pull them into law or whatever cult. No, electrical is great for prosthetics. Don't be gray beards. Confused? Kid is bright. Maybe party coordinator is 20 years of shine and burn him. Get him into marriage and parties, man. Okay, we're not going to read any more super chats from off the cuff. We have Ryan. You ready, Ryan?
I'm good to go. Thanks, gents.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
Doing really well. Hey, so this is a follow-up question sort of from a before the train wreck we had done about a month and a half or so ago. I've been looking to move on from my government contracted job, had been considering things like counseling and therapy as a next career to try and do something kind of you have a more one-on-one impact. Since that time, I've been looking into psychology degrees and social work degrees, and found out from a friend of mine that if I get a master's in social work, I can actually start practicing in Virginia in the United States, as opposed to having to wait until I get my PhD in psychology. What I wanted to ask is what the difference is in terms of training and the kind of counseling you can do or therapy you can do with a master's in social work as opposed to psychology, and whether or not going that extra 2-3 years to school is worth it when I could start practicing in 2 years with a master's.
Well, I'm biased, but I think it's worth it because you get more training, you get more clinical supervision, you get a couple more years of being in the field and having somebody bust your chops about doing a good job. Master's level work, you can basically do the same work. I think there's some differences in you know, I can issue diagnoses. I don't know that master's level people can do that, but how important is that? If you want to go into business for yourself, there's no reason not to do it other than, yeah, there's no reason not to go into that line of work with a master's degree. But
okay.
My only caution would be master's degrees programs tend to be very political and they tend to be very ideological. And you're going to have to work really hard to make sure that you get the clinical experience and the clinical supervision that isn't dripping with ideology.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't think Ryan will have that problem. He's part of my 1% community. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, but still have to deal with it and still have to fight your way through it and still have to.
Yeah, like you'll be around it. Like, Conk can fill you in too, because he does a lot of that as well right now.
Yeah. So you're just going to want to vet the program very carefully and make sure that there's a lot of clinical work and not a lot of social justice coursework.
Got it. Okay. Then the other question I would be is how important is the school itself in terms of the level of education you get? Because I've got the choice of going to school in the DC area, which is like 30 to 40,000 a semester, or there's a state school down in Richmond for about 12,000 a year for their master's level program. And obviously that's a huge difference, being able to graduate with 25 grand in debt as opposed to 160 grand in debt.
Yeah. And you get to live somewhere that's a lot nicer too. DC is a shithole.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, I would go talk
to them. It's a liberal shithole anyway.
It would have to be tremendously better in terms of clinical experience to make it worth the extra. Yeah. As long as you're getting good clinical experience on either side, I don't know why you would spend the extra money.
Okay. So focus on the program's clinical experience and the amount of clinical work you get to do in either program and the supervision. Okay. Awesome. Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, brother. Thanks, man. All right, let's do 888, and you're on. Go ahead. You have a question?
Hey, Rich and Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man.
Yeah, so my question is, I'm Mexican, and I live in the U.S. with a work visa, and I have a girlfriend of 3 years, and she's a citizen, and I guess she's in the epiphany phase. So every weekend when I see her, she wants to get married. Mm-hmm. So obviously, financially, it will be very good for me, but still my instincts tell me that I will be selling for less. So I guess my question is whether I should do it or not.
Well, why are you selling for less? Like, what are you settling for? She's not, like, what is,
yeah,
what's missing?
I guess she's not my ideal woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's only 1 year younger than me. Mm-hmm. I'm 33, and I feel like I'm going... I mean, I feel like I get better every year, either at my work and also better looking, I guess. And I think that in, let's say, 5 or 10 years, I think I wouldn't be attracted to her anymore. Yeah. Currently, we have a great relationship. Sex is great, and we travel. We get along pretty good. She's Mexican as well, so culturally, it's very, very good. But... Yeah, I mean, I don't think I will be happy in 5 or 10 years.
Do I understand correctly that marrying her would give you U.S. citizenship? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go way out on a limb here and guess that you already know what you want to do or what the right thing is to do for yourself.
Yeah, I think the right thing to do is, well, my instincts tell me to not get married and tell her that I don't want to get married and that maybe she'll look for somebody else and, you know, go on my path. But intellectually, I mean, if I was a bad person or Machiavellian or something like that, I would be like, yeah, I can get married, get citizenship, earn twice as much as I earn right now. And if we get divorced or anything, I will have citizenship in 3 to 4 years. But obviously, I will feel bad doing that.
Yeah, I don't like the idea about you know, getting married to somebody just to get a green card. Like we were talking about this at the start of the show. There was an Asian woman that had been in the States for 4 years, and she was using the lyrics that she was going to get her green card from her work, but she was also pushing the guy heavily to move in together and have kids. I don't think that's the way to go about it, especially for guys. It's a good deal for her because if it doesn't work out, she can take half his shit and she's probably got custody of the kid, especially in many states like California, for example, very hostile towards men. So it's a good deal for her, but for you, not such a good deal. I don't know that I'd want to pay that price, man, especially if it didn't work out, to somebody that you're not attracted to. I mean, if you think that she's not hot right now, wait till you have a couple of kids with her.
Yeah, we wouldn't have kids. We don't want to have kids, either of us. But
yeah,
I wouldn't be attracted to her like in a few years. I currently am very attracted to her, but in 5-10 years, I think it wouldn't work.
Well, hang on. Your story's changing from I'm not that attracted to her to I'm currently very attracted to her. So which one is it?
Well, the sex is great, so I'm very attracted to her. But,
yeah. So she's not good looking, but she's great when the lights are out in the bedroom.
Excellent. When got the lights are on, but she's great in bed. So.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I got nothing else here, Sean. You want to add to it before we go?
No, I think you know what you need to do.
All right. Okay. There you go, Triple Eight.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Triple Eight. It's like Triple X, but the Triple Eights. I got another quick super chat here. Have you ever had the Sigma male as a topic? I don't. Do you know what a Sigma male is, Sean? Is that anything of any significance?
I read about it once, but I forgot. Do you know?
Nah. I mean, alpha, beta is really placeholder for, you know, descriptive terms around certain types of behavior. So I think people like to manufacture Sigma, Omega. They've created all these other guzz. Yeah. But there's really two main obvious ones that stand out clearly. There's going to be some blurred lines. I mean, there's what we've called blue-pilled alphas. Like Lewis Howes is a blue-pilled alpha, right? Like he's solid guy, business gets his stuff, but he's letting common mistakes happen on Instagram. That was what we talked about earlier. So you can get blends of these things and the lines kind of blur. Anyway, with that being said, we're coming up on the 90-minute mark, so we should wind down here.
Yeah, I got one more thought for Mr. Yeah, Sean, if he's still out there listening. Thinking about this conversation we had with him, and the dude is lonely, and it sounds like that's really the thing that's his Achilles heel. He's professionally, man, he's on point, and he's squared away, but this loneliness has the potential to derail him. And so that seems like the problem to be solved first and foremost, because it has so much power to destroy him, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught that.
I wish I would have caught it about 10 minutes earlier, but
it's okay. He's still watching. Eventually. Guys, you can follow us there on Twitter. A few housekeeping things. So I should talk about my channel sponsor because Scott's awesome. We got the Tactical Soap Company. You're showering anyways, guys. If you're enjoying what you're watching, consider grabbing some Tactical Soap from the Grondike Soap Company. You can go to coopersoap.com. You get 10% off there. Or you can just click the link in the description below and just check out with coupon code Cooper. Pheromone-infused handmade soap in the States. Again, supports the creation of content of this channel's work. There's also a nice beard oil as well, as you can see on the stand there. That's a great product and exceptional value, actually. What else can we cover here? We've got the community, guys. If you're interested in getting into some premium content, actually every other Monday. So Sean and I, we started to get a little bit burned out dealing with too many of the same questions every single show. So we're taking every other Monday night off. The Monday nights that we're not doing the show, I'm doing a private broadcast for community members. It's more in depth. We have a little more open conversation because it's not a public broadcast. So we get into some interesting areas. So if that's something of interest to you, there's a bunch of perks. Check it out there. Link's also pinned in the description below. And I'm going to leave it at that, Sean. You have any other closing thoughts before we go?
I got a request for guys. So I got reviews on my book, The Tactical Guide to Women. And on the Audible side, I'm creeping up on 900 reviews, right? Which is cool. On the Amazon side for the ebook and the paperback, I've only got 95. So I'm looking for 5 guys to just bump me up to the triple digits on Amazon, just so I can say I got there.
There you go. And it's a great book. If you haven't read it yet, guys, get Sean T. Smith's Tactical Guide to Women. It helps you understand what red flags to look for when it comes to dating, and take your time. If I can give you one piece of advice before we go, turn off the afterburners, flip up the air brake, and slow the hell down, because all you guys that are asking about wifing up women after barely knowing them for only a few months or even a year, not even knowing the greatest details or stressing the relationship with any kind of significant travel, slow down. Yep. Ask some questions. Listen to your spidey senses, gentlemen. We're back in 2 weeks on November the 18th. By the way, if you're watching this if you're listening to this as a podcast, please rate it on the podcast platform. So those of you guys watching it live right now, it is also available in audio form on your favorite podcast platforms. Just search for Before the Train Wreck. Next show is November 18th. You on for that one, Sean?
You bet.
All right. So we'll see you guys back on the 18th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for watching tonight. We'll see you in the next one. Peace out.